What does it mean to lose your mother before you've fully understood who she was? Michelle Zahner's journey begins in the most ordinary of places, a Korean grocery store, where grief ambushes her without warning. H Mart isn't just where you buy gochugaru and dried anchovies. It's a portal to a world where her mother still exists, vibrant and demanding, critiquing the ripeness of Asian pears and selecting the perfect cut of beef. Standing in those fluorescent-lit aisles, surrounded by banchan refrigerators and unfamiliar packages covered in hangul, Zahner realizes she's lost more than a parent. She's lost her connection to an entire culture, a language spoken not just in words, but in the careful preparation of miyeokguk and the precise fermentation of kimchi. Here, among strangers who share her features but not her story, she begins to understand that identity isn't something you're born with. It's something you eat, prepare, and mourn for when it's gone. Chung Mi was the kind of mother who could make you feel simultaneously cherished and inadequate, often in the same breath. Her proverbs weren't pulled from ancient Korean wisdom, but manufactured fresh from her own fierce philosophy. Stop crying. Save your tears for when your mother dies. This wasn't cruelty. It was her version of preparing her daughter for a world that wouldn't coddle weakness. She maintained her appearance with religious devotion, a 10-step skincare routine performed with the precision of a scientist. QVC products defended like family heirlooms against anyone who dared suggest drugstore alternatives, and a home so immaculate that young Michelle would sometimes clean her mother's precious figurine collection just to earn a moment of approval. The house gleamed with porcelain ballerinas frozen in eternal grace, Dutch miniature houses with hand-painted shutters, and Swarovski crystal animals that caught the light like tiny prisms. Objects that represented not just taste, but the American dream her mother had claimed through sheer force of will. Each piece had been carefully selected, dusted weekly, and positioned with the exactitude of a museum curator. Their relationship existed in that complicated space where love and criticism become indistinguishable, where mommy is the only one who will tell you the truth meant both brutal honesty and unwavering devotion. It was a love language Michelle had to learn to decode, the harshness masking a desperate desire to protect her daughter from disappointment and failure. Food became their neutral territory, the place where affection could flow freely without the complications of words or the sting of correction. At Seoul's Noryeongjin Fish Market, surrounded by the smell of brine and the calls of vendors, Michelle discovered she could finally excel at something her mother valued, courage in eating, devouring live octopus that writhed against her tongue and raw sea cucumber with its strange oceanic texture, while her mother watched with rare, undisguised pride radiating from her face. Every other summer, Michelle escaped Eugene's isolation for 6 weeks in Seoul, where her grandmother's cramped three-bedroom apartment somehow felt more spacious than their Oregon home on 5 acres. Here, squeezed among 6 family members sharing tight quarters and navigating each other's routines, the careful choreography of bathroom schedules, the strategic timing of meals, the unspoken understanding of when to give someone space in a place where space barely existed, she found the freedom that eluded her in America's wide-open spaces. The paradox was striking. Physical confinement brought emotional expansion, while Oregon's vast acreage had felt suffocating. In Seoul, she could simply exist without explanation, her Korean face requiring no justification, her presence needing no defense. No one asked where she was really from or complimented her English with surprised admiration. She was simply another girl in the crowd, unremarkable in the most liberating way possible. The apartment's walls, thin enough to hear her grandmother's morning prayers and her uncle's late-night phone calls, contained a kind of belonging she couldn't find in Eugene's silent, sprawling yards. Her cousin Song Young tolerated her constant shadowing despite his teenage self-consciousness, letting her trail him through PC bangs, internet cafes, where the air hung thick with cigarette smoke and the clicking of keyboards, and convenience stores where she marveled at snacks she'd never seen in American aisles, banana-flavored milk in cheerful yellow bottles, dried squid strips that smelled terrible but tasted addictive, rice cakes in colors that seemed impossible in nature. He'd roll his eyes when she asked too many questions, but always waited for her to catch up when she lagged behind, distracted by storefront displays or street vendors. Aunt Nami painted her nails in bold colors her mother would never permit: electric blue, metallic purple, neon pink, and performed dramatic readings from her anime dubbing scripts, her voice transforming from sweet to fierce in seconds, demonstrating how a single character could contain multitudes. Michelle would sit mesmerized, watching her aunt embody different personas with just vocal inflection, learning that identity itself could be performance, could be chosen. The youngest aunt, Yunmi, felt more like an older sister, taking Michelle to street markets in Dongdaemun where vendors shouted prices and thrust samples into their hands, and teaching her Korean slang that made her grandmother shake her head in mock disapproval. Words that felt dangerous and exciting on Michelle's tongue, linguistic rebellion her mother would never have allowed. These relationships, uncomplicated by the weight of assimilation or the need to translate herself, offered Michelle a glimpse of who she might have been if her family had never left Korea, a version of herself that moved through the world with easy confidence, unburdened by the constant code-switching that defined her American existence.